we're going to call this Five Ways to Peace. All right. And the reason we're calling it Five Ways to Peace is because the Urantia Revelation has given us in paper 52 a way to get to universal brotherhood and peace and goodwill, which is our goal. If the mandate be you perfect, even as I am perfect, is the mandate from God, then what is the point of our world? Our world will one day achieve universal peace and goodwill. That is the plan. That is the end objective. And when we get there, life is going to be a whole lot better for a lot of people. So I want to take a minute or two and just talk about what the implications are and also contrast it with what we're seeing in the world today, because we are seeing a lot of conflict. The reason we're seeing a lot of conflict, in my humble opinion, is because some societies and some races and some cultures are progressing far farther in advance than others, even within society. So, for example, one of the effects of the migrations in Europe is that you have a very large group of people who come from a country where they're not accustomed to the infrastructure, or they have not lived in that kind of an environment, and the adaptation process is slower. And it also and also the amount of having a lot of impoverished people at one time and having to take care of those basic needs is a drain on the infrastructure of the current system, which is what we have in the United States along border towns and border cities, places like Tucson and Phoenix and El Paso. There's a generally more of a drain on the resources because of the fact you have a lot more poverty. So poverty is really a reflection, a yardstick, if you will, of how fast society is developing overall. You know, you have trendsetters, you have leaders, you have countries that learn that a republic democracy is good, it works, liberty is important. We're learning all this stuff. You know, human evolution is a process. Perfection is a process. You know, you get better over time. No different from you're a child when you learn how to walk to a country that goes from being a monarchy to a representative government to eventually where you have, guess what, 50 states where everybody kind of gets along. And that's where we're at. So let me pick up on paper 52 and where it gives us the five steps. And then we could talk a little bit about those five steps to peace and goodwill. Five steps to peace. Number one, social fraternity. Oh, and by the way, these can also be yardsticks that tell us how we're doing. How are we doing in that process of trying to achieve peace and spiritual realization of the brotherhood of man on our world? So number one, first step that you have to have, social fraternity. It reads multiplication of international and interracial social contacts and fraternal associations through travel, commerce, competitive play, the development of a common language and the multiplication of multilinguists, the racial and national interchange of students, teachers, industrialists, and religious philosophers. I would say that we could put a check by that, couldn't we? I think we've made great progress in the 19th and 20th century and even the 21st century towards that goal. English, I think, is the common language among pilots and among bankers and finance institutions. The U.S. dollar is common currency. Wouldn't matter if it was the yen or the U.S. dollar. It's a common. It's a way for people to have commerce interchange with one another. All right, so let's move on to two, intellectual cross-fertilization. Brotherhood is impossible on a world whose inhabitants are so primitive that they fail to recognize the folly of unmitigated selfishness. There must occur an exchange of national and racial literature. Each race must become familiar with the thoughts of all races. Each nation must know the feelings of all nations. Ignorance breeds suspicion, and suspicion is incompatible with the essential attitude of sympathy and love. And so to that extent, I would say that countries that tend toward sharing culture and racial interchange of ideas tend to do better. I think if we look back at the last 200 to 300 years, what we see is that those countries that are willing to share their ideas tend to have better societies. It's not complete. There are still countries through what they say unmitigated selfishness. If you want to look at the warlords and certain despots that want to rule with an iron fist, that's not going to produce the kind of society where there is a realization of brotherhood. It'll never happen. It'll constantly be a place of strife and crime and corruption and death and torture, murder. It will never evolve. If you don't have intellectual cross-fertilization, if your country isn't actively and peacefully engaged in learning the thoughts and ideas of other countries, you're dead. Number three, ethical awakening. Only ethical consciousness can unmask the immorality of human intolerance and the sinfulness of fratricidal strife. Only a moral consciousness can condemn the evils of national envy and racial jealousy. Only moral beings will ever seek for that spiritual insight which is essential to living the golden rule. So this is one of those things where nobody really can cast a stone, because he is without sin. Go ahead. You could look this at a macro level as well as a micro level. So on the macro level, we can look to other countries like China, for example, and what they're doing with the Uyghurs on the western side of their country, or how they're treating people that don't follow with the Chinese philosophy. We can look at them and say that's not good. And of course, they can, look at us and say, well, why do you have so many people in jail? Well, because people here in our country, we suffer from immorality. We suffer from crime. We suffer from, those things that make us intolerant or sinful. Those things that are destructive to our society, I think, is what we're guilty of in our country. We have so much liberty that we're self-destructive. All right. So again, we have to deal eventually someday with the fact that we need to make spiritual insight the goal of the individual. Learning to live the golden rule is a great place to start. When you start learning to treat others as you would like to be treated, then you'll start to see that from two people to a small community, to a city, to a nation. And if that becomes the way, the standard behavior, then everyone benefits, and we can get closer to that point where there is indeed national brotherhood, peace, and goodwill. All right, so here's a good one. Political wisdom. This is number four. Five steps to peace on earth. Number four, political wisdom. Emotional maturity is essential to self-control. Only emotional maturity will ensure the substitution of international techniques of civilized adjudication to the barbarous arbitrament of war. And I'm not sure how that is spelled, arbitrament of war. So what it's basically saying is, well, wise statesmen and sometimes work for the welfare of humanity even while they strive to promote the interest of their national or racial groups. Selfish potential sagacity is ultimately suicidal, destructive of all those enduring qualities which ensure planetary group survival. So this is sort of like two paragraphs that seem to contradict each other. Emotional maturity is essential to self-control. That's about political wisdom. Only emotional maturity will ensure the substitution of international techniques of civilized adjudication for the barbarous arbitrament of war. So to extract that means that our government leaders must be emotionally mature. Wise statesmen, it says, will sometimes work for the welfare of humanity even while they strive to promote the interest of their national and racial groups. So there's a balance. It doesn't have to be America first. But if America first is ultimately because we know that in doing so, it makes the rest of the world better, that works. Any country that is asserting itself for any other reason other than to make the world better is selfish and destructive and ultimately suicidal. So that would be number four, political wisdom. Without it, we will never get to peace on earth. And then lastly, number five, spiritual insight. The brotherhood of man is, after all, predicated on the recognition of the fatherhood of God. The quickest way to realize the brotherhood of man is to effect the spiritual transformation of present-day humanity. The only technique for accelerating the natural trend of social evolution is that of applying more spiritual pressure from above, thus augmenting moral insight while enhancing the soul capacity of every mortal to understand and love every other mortal. Mutual understanding and fraternal love are transcendent civilizers and mighty factors in the worldwide realization of the brotherhood of man. And I'll end it with this, because it ends that segment with this. It says, if you could be transplanted from your backward and confused world to some normal planet now in the post-bestowal sun age, you would think you'd been translated to the heavens of your traditions. You would hardly believe that you were observing the normal evolutionary workings of a mortal sphere of human habitation. These worlds are in the spiritual circuits of their realm, and they enjoy all the advantages of the universe broadcasts and the reflectivity services of the super universe. Translation? If we had not lived on, or were not living on such a backward world, and we were more spiritual, we would actually be in communication with other worlds that are spiritual. That's pretty heavy stuff. That's like leaps and bounds over what every other philosophy or theology teaches. But pause to consider the enormous concept of that. When we as mortals on our world, the Urantia Revelation is saying, when we get to the point where we have true spiritual insight, we will be allowed to participate and be a part of the other worlds that are also at that stage of evolution. That's pretty exciting. And in a way, our future is in our own hands. But we're never going to get there in our present state. We're never going to get there without improved social fraternity, improved intellectual cross-fertilization, improved ethical awakening, improved political wisdom, and definitely improved spiritual insight. And as a social yardstick, you can see where we lag, where our deficits are. But on the note of spiritual pressure from above, that's an interesting statement, because I'm not sure what the implication of that means. Does that mean that God or his angelic servers are going to start asserting themselves? Are we going to get a visit? Are we going to get a disaster which will force us? Will our society break down to the point where we're begging for God for an answer? Will we be delivered from our sinful natures? You know, who knows? It depends on who you ask. But they all seem to say that in order to get from point A to point B, we've got to work on ourselves. And they lay it out in five easy steps. This is what you need to do. You do these things, and you too can be a part of the rest of the universe. And if you don't know it, we are in quarantine. We are cut off, literally cut off spiritually. Circuits have been severed. We're not entitled to what they call the universal broadcast and the reflectivity services. One day, it could be that way. So those are the five steps to peace and goodwill on earth. And I thought I would share them this time up with the Urantia Radio podcast, because it's a subject that, even if you're not familiar with the Urantia book, which I suspect many people who listen to this podcast may not be, they may be at the beginning stages of trying to figure out what the book is. And then for the more serious reader, it's always good to go back and reflect on one particular part, and with all the social strife that's going on in the world today, something like this sort of brings us back into focus, and it provides, I think, hope and inspiration, which is partly what this podcast is all about. Until next time, thank you again for supporting me on the Arantia Radio podcast. Don't forget, you can always go online and use that as a tool to sort of connect with other events that are going on within the Arantia community. And in the meantime, I'm always easily contactable. My email address is arantiabookradio@gmail.com. Arantiabookradio@gmail.com. Until next time, thanks again for joining me, and God bless.